faith. Last week, we used the document by that same name, which is available from the ELCA, and is also available in the bookstore here if you'd like to pick it up before you go. It's a study guide that was prepared for discussion about human sexuality by a task force of the ELCA, and in preparation toward having a statement which will be adopted at the ELC Churchwide Assembly in 1995. And individuals and congregations of the Lutheran Church are asked to study the document, and there are some gray pages in the back of it that are put together for response. It says on there that the response date is due June 30th, but that has been extended to December 1st, so there's still time to work it into your fall educational series, and I would encourage you to do that. This week, we've been looking more at issues of homophobia and gay and lesbian people, who gay and lesbian people are, who's affected by the issues that we have in our society regarding gay and lesbian people. And that's many more than the 10% of people who are gay or lesbian. It's their parents, siblings, other family members, people in the school system who work with these youngsters as they're growing up and in the midst of their discernment process about their sexuality. And today, as Gay Lesbian Awareness Day, I switched the focus a little, and the focus is going to be on gay lesbian awareness and what is the church's role in that awareness. How do we bring that about within church and in society? Let me just do a little backup about homophobia, what it is. I've described it as several things. Part, it is a fear of difference. That in our society, the way we respond to difference often is with fear. And that I was posing and talking about it and the way we deal with difference, that the less knowledge and experience we have with a particular difference, be that people of the other gender, people from other countries, people whose skin color is different from our own. For a while, I think Swedes and Norwegians had trouble trying to figure out about the differences of one another. Sexual orientation is partly on that list. People who are differently abled. And that depending on what our own experience is, there's sort of a descending order in which those things get listed, and the less experience and knowledge we've had with it, it almost disappears out of our realm of consciousness as we talk about it. And in some ways, gay and lesbian people have kind of disappeared from the realm of consciousness in our churches. In thinking of gay and lesbian people as being members, or their parents as being members, it's as though often the conversation gets cast in a them and us, them being the outsider and we being inside the church. And my fear is that sometimes people have an image of, if we decide to welcome gay and lesbian people to our congregations, then there's so many of them lined up out there, they'll be banging down the door and the church will be changed and it won't be ours anymore. The reality of it is that there are many of us who are inside the church, who have stayed there, who have been children brought up in the church, and who continue to be there as adults and as faithful people. And our question to wrestle with is, what's the role of gay and lesbian people in our midst? Another part of the definition is fearing gay and lesbian people. Another part, fearing the part of ourselves that may feel attracted to same gender. Or perhaps in its connection with sex role in our society, it is the rigidness with which men and women are defined, a more rigid box for males than we have for females, that the fear that is homophobia could be described as men fearing the feminine in themselves and women fearing the masculine in themselves. Another part of the definition has been to talk about fear of sexuality, that we don't talk about sexuality very easily or readily in our culture, and the term to describe that is erotophobia, fear of sex, or the eros. The one that affects all of us and all of the time is the one that about fearing that we might be perceived as gay or lesbian. And we talked a bit in an earlier session this week about that starts at a very young age. We talked about 5 to 7 year old boys doing the latest thing of the week, being that climb the garage roof or jump out the tree. What happens to them if they don't? Their peers call them what? Sissy, girl. They get labeled that somehow they might be other gender, and if they step too far out of that role of what it is to be growing into young manhood or into manhood, then perhaps homosexuality is part of what they need to fear. I'm going to try to spend some time this evening looking at sexuality and different ways in which we regard sexuality, a little bit about personal attitude and how we respond to difference, particularly homophobia. And then we'll be doing an exercise together, all of us, trying to answer that question that was kind of posed in the topic for today about gay lesbian awareness. What is the church's role? Because I've heard it voiced here at Holden, and I believe it too, that the church is us. We are the church. In this place and in the places in which we reside at home, the church isn't some other out there that tells us how things need to be done, but we, as the community of people, are the church. So it's up to us to sort of answer that question. So if you're expecting me to give a lecture 1, 2, 3 about here's the things to do to make sure gay awareness happens in your church, I'm sorry, that's not what's going to happen this evening. I've mapped out here on the board a spectrum of attitudes about sexuality. And some of this material is coming from one of the first documents that came out of our task force called Can We Talk About This? And it's an audio tape and a study guide for Christians preparing to discuss homosexuality. It's here in the Resource Center and is still available also from the ELCA Resource Center. And on this spectrum, it starts on the far left with sex as sin. And that is a position talking about sexuality that describes sexuality as a lust of the flesh, a vehicle of sin, describes sex as dirty and it should never be talked about in public. The second position on there talks about sex as purity, that sex is good, but its only real good is God's purpose of procreation, and therefore we must keep it and ourselves pure. So sex is purity. The third is about sexuality as natural order, seeing sexuality as God-given, a created gift given only to married heterosexual people for their enjoyment and also for procreation. The fourth there talks about sex as relational, having sexuality be described as a sacrament of intimacy and life. Again, God-given, but God-given for play and enjoyment and continuing of the bond of committed relationship, as well as procreation. I wouldn't rule it out as completely separate from the previous position. The fifth one describes sexuality as loving. Sexuality as a healthy, natural activity that any two people should enjoy if they're loving and caring, whether or not they're in a committed relationship. The sixth position talks about sex as responsible or safer sex, that sexuality is okay, anything goes for everyone as long as it's responsible sexuality. And then the last or seventh position on this particular continuum talks about sex as indiscriminate enjoyment, that sexuality is getting the most pleasure with the most people. Enjoying sex is what life is all about. If it feels good, do it. That kind of position. And I'd like for us to take just 5 minutes in small groups of, say, five people to talk about where I see myself in that continuum and perhaps where you see the church as a whole. So if you would turn your chairs in circles, those on the balcony, just gather around in a smaller group, and looking at this continuum, talk about where you see yourself and where you see the church.
Yeah, that
Yes.
Could you bring your definition?
Yeah.
Okay, if I can have your attention for a minute, let me ask you to turn your attention as a group. Let me ask you to turn your attention in your group to this question. Hello? You don't need me tonight, you're just gonna talk, okay. Let me ask you to look at each one of these seven positions and decide how you think from that stance, from that position or attitude, you would respond to the question of homosexuality. You know, if you were standing in the position of sex as sin.
Like, you mean for us personally?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, from that position, how would you respond to homosexuality? Because the way the thing is worked out, some groups have started talking about heterosexuality, and I'm trying to focus our question on the issue of homosexuality. At which point, you know, would we change from denial of sexuality to that group of people to perhaps allowing such sexuality or even seeing it as God-given? Just look at each of those four positions. I won't ask you to reach consensus, I think it'll take too long. From each of those positions, how do you think you're holding to standing squarely on the spot that says sex is sin? How would you respond to homosexuality? Sexuality is sin. How would you respond? How would each of those respond? So sex is sin. You're responding to everything. So that's the position that's denying sexuality regarding. The second one, sex is purity, talks about this.
How about if you go through?
So that position is not going to. Some people have children of their own, some adopt, some have children of their own. The natural order position would allow it for persons to be appropriate.
Actually, I would also allow for. Where do you want us?
And talk about how each of those. For everybody, right. The second one, Darlene is saying raises question marks because it's just appropriation. She's saying any of us people have the ability to do something. Certainly in our, there's a lot of things in the way that's not available prior to now, artificial. Providing sperm and a surrogate mother. The ways in which, you can talk about it there.
I
Hey, let's have some conversation as an entire group about the exercise of trying to discuss these different attitudes towards sexuality. I've added some little notes here saying that the sex is sin position is a sort of anti-body, anti-pleasure kind of position. And yet, regarding homosexuality, as it does with heterosexuality, say that sex is dirty, shouldn't happen, that we shouldn't be involved in sexual liaison. The second one, talking about sex as purity, talks about sex particularly for procreation, which is a position perhaps which would rule out same gender pairing and sexuality within that, although one of the groups that I stood in on this was saying, yes, but gay and lesbian people do have children. They have them from prior marriages. With our technology and sexuality today, people are being artificially inseminated, bearing their own children. A male-male couple could perhaps, through a sperm bank, find a surrogate mother to have a child. So perhaps the procreation question is not ruled out as well. So there begins to be a question mark even this early on about gay and lesbian people and the response on this continuum. Sex as natural order sort of is a position that includes procreation but also pleasure. So it's a step farther. And that position too, because of the same things I just mentioned about the possibilities of procreation, might fit there as well. The fourth one about seeing sex as relational or as part of its purpose to help build the bond of commitment between the two is clearly to me a place where gay and lesbian coupling and the building of commitment and relationship, that sexuality would be all right in this position, probably more clearly than the question marks in the two before. The fifth one about sex as loving talks about consenting adults and not implying commitment, and that too would be a position that either heterosexual or homosexual people could fit into. Sex as safe or responsible, anything goes if it's safe, would mean safe from sexually transmitted diseases, safe from perhaps starting an embryo on its way to life, and that position too. Sort of once we hit position four, anything from here on out, it would include, and perhaps three and two as well. The sex as indiscriminate enjoyment position, if it feels good, do it, is something I've heard people here saying, and we've sort of been through a period of that in the 70s, and we've sort of come around the corner on that to another place now. Much of the work that the task force has been doing about sexuality falls in this place about sex as relational, bonding, commitment, which sort of includes also procreation, pleasure, that those are parts of it. And in generating lists of what are the things that we think are necessary for a healthy sexual relationship, the group gathered in here earlier this week made a list of characteristics such as those, talking about trust and honesty, intimacy, mutuality, commitment was on the list, love, but all of those words, and as we described those, then the question was before us, could those characteristics apply to a same-gender relationship? And if so, if they meet all of the requirements that we've talked about for being a healthy relationship, why is it that the church would or would not move forward with blessing of same-sex relationships, which was the topic of our forum last evening? Comments about having done that? I think it would be a long wrestling for a group even of five or six people to reach a consensus about where we feel the church perhaps is and should be on this particular continuum, which is to say there are varying viewpoints within our church about sexuality. And sometimes I think the task before us in this arena is not to nail down the final board in understanding sexuality and where we ought to be or ought not to be, but it is to recognize that there is difference of opinion, strongly held beliefs, beliefs built on one's understanding of their faith, of how they read scripture, and that maybe the task before us as we move forward in the church is to work on, as one teacher in the Twin Cities has put it, has begun working with congregations, how do we come to terms without coming to blows in the church? You know, so that there's not stone throwing across the room as we begin to talk these things. And, you know, I think, I wish we could get everybody to Holden, because setting the tone for that seems to happen here in some ways that perhaps don't happen as readily back in our home churches. Let me move now to look at attitudes towards differences. And this is the Riddle scale. Dr. Dorothy Riddle, in her PhD work, was looking at the question of homophobia and looking at people's responses to it. And the scale that she's devised here would fit for any kind of difference. And she lists on there repulsion is what would be a position of seeing people who are different. And we're talking about the specific difference of same gender orientation, to see that difference as sick or crazy. Anything that we can do to change it would be justifiable. It's from that kind of position that aversion therapy and shock treatment and other kinds of things were used to try to change gay and lesbian people to another position, back to heterosexuality. The position of pity is one that sees people as somehow born that way, and it's kind of sad, you know, do the best you can with what you've got, but recognize that it's immature kind of position. The third one, tolerance, is somehow thinking that it's a phase that people will grow through, so we must be tolerant of it in the way we are tolerant of children who haven't learned yet not to do certain things, but we keep pushing them toward maturity, which would be heterosexuality equals maturity. Acceptance implies that one needs to make accommodations for another's difference, but it doesn't necessarily acknowledge that the difference or the created is equal to my own. What was such a shock to me to begin using that was that on Riddle's scale, she listed all four of these responses as negative attitudes, negative level of attitude towards difference. And to recognize for me that I'd been spending a decade in the church trying to help people move to position of tolerance and acceptance was kind of a shock. And when we talked about it at Forum last night, we thought perhaps for us within the faith community, maybe the words we need to be looking for rather than tolerance and acceptance are trying to embody welcoming and hospitality. Of talking, what is the church's role? We might think about those two key words to hold on to. She divides four other levels as positive levels. First, support, people who begin to safeguard the human rights of gay and lesbian people. There are such bills that come up in particular cities to add an ordinance to protect gay and lesbian people so they're not fired from their jobs or kicked out of housing if it's found out that they're gay or lesbian. I think there is a bill that's going through Congress right now looking at adding gay and lesbian orientation or sexual orientation to through a bill in Congress. Admiration acknowledges that being different in our society takes strength, and people who are at this position begin to look at themselves and work on their own personal issues about this. At the level of appreciation, you value the differences of people and you're willing to confront insensitivity when you hear it. Respond to jokes rather than staying silent about them. People's misunderstandings about sexual orientation you may help provide a different background for. The position of nurturance is one that assumes that the differences in people are indispensable in society, that we can't do without them. There's a reason for all the variety that we have. Sometimes I ask that question about, you know, when I read Genesis, I see in there the creation of many different kinds of creatures, of styles of weather, if you will, that God in creation had many themes and lots of variations on them. And in part, I ask the question about sexuality. Do we think that there is not such a variation created in that natural order of things, if you will? Why did God create so many kinds of bugs? Did we really need all those? Different skin colors, for example, eye color, zillions of kinds of flowers and shades of them. Why is it that we think people should all come in heterosexual white packages? You know, might be the question for us to put back, and able-bodied packages. Perhaps there is something for us to learn from the differences of everyone, would be talking about that last position. Comments or questions about this attitudes piece? To the difference in response to it or the movement on it to a person's age necessarily, perhaps to their experience, to their knowledge about difference and about sexuality. What has their experience been? I can see for myself where I have moved and from time to time feel that I'm in nuance of different places on that, and know that in terms of attitudes towards difference, I see myself moving and changing. I know where I want to go in perhaps being with people who are differently able, as an example. but I don't see it as a stepwise, up the ladder kind of, more a free-floating, almost spiral kind of way of approaching it. My throat is getting awfully dry, so I'm going to duck out to get some water. But what I want us to turn to now is back in your small groups to the question of the church's role. To me, as though we had 10 different groups, and I want two groups to become the committees. I can't do it. Excuse me. Up here what I think are probably the five most common kinds of committees we have in our churches. Worship, evangelism, advocacy, pastoral care, and education. And back in your groups, I'm going to ask each group to take a different, be a different committee, and to put together what are some of the things that you think must be included from that committee's perspective to bring about gay and lesbian awareness within your congregation. So, if this first group that was in this circle would take worship, and the first group up here worship, okay? That's your worship committee and your worship committee, okay? And you were another group just here? Why don't you take the evangelism question? Up in the corner is another. you take the question of advocacy. Okay, your committee is an advocacy committee for your church. Your group be pastoral care. All right? Back in the corner, if you would take education. Your group, let me move back to evangelism. All right? Can you want to pair up on the balcony for another?
Sure.
All right. If you'll take also the question of pastoral care. You hold that education over.
Thank you. control the building program if we have a session.
Do you take just one more minute to wrap up, then we'll put your responses on the board. All right, let me call your attention back. Let's hear from our worship committees first. One I would add to the list is just saying the words gay or lesbian in that space. That oftentimes, I mean, I've been in a congregation where we've done that, and I've seen people sit in the pew and cry for an hour because they've never heard their name mentioned in the midst of the prayers for the people. So just say gay lesbian. Say it out loud. Okay?
In our context, I think you mentioned it's made a prayer for those who are suffering from AIDS as well.
Prayer for persons with AIDS.
Yeah.
Just the inclusion in the prayers of the day for people
right.
who are oppressed. All right. Any others?
Well, the only thing that our group would add to the being in gay and lesbian speakers is specifically that they would talk about their story of faith, because that's what we felt that would help to counter the prejudice of people who are marginalized by the church.
And to think about that group of people as we prepare for worship, whatever is the particular pericope of the week as we look at that. For example, looking at the story of Jesus and the blind man, sort of a gay lesbian paraphrase of that would be to say that the Pharisees were trying to trip Jesus up and went to him and said, "Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he is gay?" And Jesus' response to that about the blind man, which I think is a fitting one, this is to say, "No one has sinned, but he was made this way so that the glory of God may be made manifest in him. And it goes on to the community says, well, we always knew him as a blind man, and he's not anymore. Sometimes coming out feels like that too, that people might say, I always knew them as a heterosexual. How can it be that they have become this and have not been in on the internal process, discernment process of struggle about who I am? So using examples from gay, lesbian community, even as we prepare for sermon material with Fit. Any more?
It's a public welcome.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, that brings us right to evangelism. Thank you for that little segue. Here we go. Evangelism. Who is that?
I think there was consensus within our group is that it's important how the congregation approaches gay, lesbian people. If they're going to be full partners within the approach, such as marriage, partnering, that's important because as far as being is inviting someone into the church.
So to be full participants.
Mm-hmm. The evangelism committee has to be a consensus as advocates for gay, lesbians, and perhaps writing a mission statement that is not exclusive of any group, but makes it clear that we're an inclusive
country. Mm-hmm. And with the weight of history that has said a word of unwelcome to gay and lesbian people, the sign out front that says all are welcome isn't specific enough to let them know that really means me this time. So, you know, that kind of naming it in the mission statement. Other things from evangelism groups?
Mm-hmm. At one extreme, the evangelism committee could propose to the church council that the congregation become a reconciled in Christ congregation.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
I can speak to that, or perhaps you'd like to, Pastor. Reconciled in Christ congregations is a designation that Lutherans Concerned has begun working on. Also, other denominations are working on it. It is for a congregation to go through an intentional process of sort of education and coming to a place of saying, we would like to extend a welcome to gay and lesbian people to be full participating members in our congregation, to bring their gifts and resources, etc., and having to take no additional oath other than the same oath of faith and baptism that other people in the community take, which is to say, it's not demanded that they do additional things like be celibate or not serve on Sunday school because they're with children, or you know, to work out some of those things. But it is an intentional process that often, in my experience with congregations, has led to several years of a series of education, having speakers in, working on that before they felt they were at a point of readiness to say, yes, we would like to have our names added to that roster, which Lutherans Concerned would then publish. I think that there are 75 Reconciled in Christ congregations so designated in the ELCA, which is not a lot when you think we have, I think, 17,000 congregations. So 75 out of that's kind of drop in the bucket, but it's real exciting to see that happen. I have here, if you might want to look at it from the resource room, a copy of a magazine called Open Hands, the Journal of the Reconciling Congregation Program of the Methodist Church, and it's the only such piece. The ones that I pulled out of the resource room here are talking about an emerging community, about gay and lesbian people being in that community, and this one is talking about raising reconciling children. How do we talk with our children about these issues as they grow? Yes, go ahead.
At the other extreme, again, being alert to where the congregation is, perhaps nudging the education committee to do a series on differences and to whom does the church reach out? That's an old question in the Christian community, and there's lots of biblical things about that.
Okay. What else on advocacy? Yes, advocacy.
I don't know that we had a long list of consensus. Mm-hmm. The sense that I got was that the particular concerns of any given region might differ from region could be, in other words, civil rights issues outside of the religious community, concerns of the general community of non-discrimination, or they could be concerns of discrimination and unwelcomeness within the community, and advocacy could go to a sense of participation and belonging within the religious community as well.
And that's well said.
Back up on the worship thing, seems to me we should link in the conversation from the other evening about the blessing of committed friendships.
Okay, so add blessing of relationship. All right. Was there a second advocacy group? I think there was one that didn't get repeated. Any other things from your group here? I think responding to the community needs, it's helpful that you've talked about that as being regional, which means you as a congregation have to be in touch with where's the gay lesbian community here in Blue Earth, Minnesota. We have a lot of those folks here. Where is it in the Twin Cities? Where is it in Valparaiso on the campus? In my own city, in St. Paul, we had a human rights ordinance which included gay and lesbian people that was put on the books by city council in 1974. In 1978, it went before a referendum repeal vote in which people who were against this ordinance gathered enough signatures to put it on the fall ballot, and that ordinance was repealed. Now, as an issue of justice, you know, we've tried to gather people within the church to say it perhaps is inappropriate for us to put the rights for protection of a minority up to a majority vote to determine whether or not they get protection. And it wasn't returned into that city ordinance on the books until 2 years ago, and there was yet another referendum repeal, which it survived this time, but the threat is always there, that if the people decide to put together a vote to say we want to get rid of this, then it means lots of energy and money and time of gay lesbian community and their supporters to try to fight that and to keep that in place. Yes?
Many churches allow community groups to use their facilities, and our church has parents' flag group that meets once a month at our church.
Yeah. You're from Chico, am I remembering that right? When I picked up this copy of the PFLAG poll, it's called. The PFLAG stands for Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, and PFLAG poll is the name of their newspaper. There's a piece in here about a church in Chico, and I wondered if it was the same. So it's interesting to make that connection. Thank you. But to offer to have Lutherans Concerned have a place to meet. I've been a part of Lutherans Concerned from the times when we had to meet in people's homes, when we were not welcome as a community in a church. Then we moved to a place of churches saying, well, you can come, but you can't advertise that this is where you meet. So you had to call someplace and find out.